Hey, you are listening to The Growth Signal. My name is Alyssa Nolte.
And I'm Joe Candido.
And we're going to get right into it. Joe, what is your hot take?
My hot take is that salespeople don't sell, leaders sell.
Okay, I can't wait to dive into this because I was literally just having a conversation yesterday about how sellers, like, they have everything that everybody else in the company wants, right? That, like, they do all the things, they have the most power in the company, and yet they have some of the worst behavior when it comes to, like, being team players. And I say that as a seller myself, so I get to talk shit because that's who I am too. But tell us a little bit more about what you mean by that. If I'm not a seller, if sellers don't sell, but leaders do, what does that actually mean?
Yeah, so thank you for asking the question. I'd love to clarify it. So my belief is that sellers are largely trying to achieve their goals, and there's nothing wrong with that, but they do it at the expense of the prospect or customer, not in support of them. And leaders really understand their customers. They provide assistance. They provide thought leadership, insights, and they build trust and credibility. And trust and credibility are the foundation for doing business. Every customer has choices. They can buy from your competitors. Nobody's got a product that's so amazing that they don't have a competitor. And so when they choose to buy from your company, it starts with believing in you, trusting you, thinking that you're credible. And you have to earn that. You have to prove that. Salespeople come out of the block pitching. And nobody wants a pitch. You know, you're going to tell me what I should buy when you don't even know who I am? That doesn't work, right? But if I can build a relationship and demonstrate that I understand your industry, then you might be willing to talk to me. You might be willing to share some of your challenges. And then we could get into, hey, here's some possible solutions. And so it's really putting the customer first and being business outcome centric. That's what leaders do.
I have been on the receiving end and standing like next to some really slimy sellers is what I will call them. I once wrote an article, it's a long time ago now, but it was basically like, when it comes to sales, a lot of sellers have the mentality that in order for me to win, the customer has to lose, right? It's a two-way struggle, a battle of who can win the most concessions from the other.
Exactly.
And I agree with you because nobody wants to be on that side of it. And it felt gross to me sitting on the winning team side of the table, even though, you know, we're getting the big deal, we're getting a ton of revenue. I knew we weren't going to be delivering the value that they were paying for.
Yeah. And, you know, it shouldn't be a win-lose. When you do it right, your customer's super satisfied. You get repeat business. You get referrals. You feel good about yourself. You know, that's the way it should be done. And it's not a difficult thing to do it that way. You can do a better job helping your customer and achieving your own goals if you just put them first. You know, if you jam a solution down their throat and it doesn't fit properly, even if you make the sale, now you're going to have problems. The implementation won't go well. The customer won't be satisfied. You're going to spend a lot of time in damage control mode. That's not successful. Nobody wins in that scenario.
Unfortunately, though, a lot of companies, I feel like, incentivize a top-line close and then don't have any consequences for a down-the-line implementation fail, right? That ends up on customer success or delivery or whoever actually has to do the work. They end up with kind of the sludge of jamming something through.
Absolutely right. And so that's the other half of, you know, leaders sell, right? Because leadership, and I'm now talking about hierarchical leadership in an organization, needs to take responsibility for the behavior of the sales team. They set the culture, they set the tempo. And so if you say, hey, I want you to be, you know, customer centric, and then you pressure them constantly to close a deal immediately, you know, you're contradicting yourself. You're hypocritical and you don't really mean what you say. And the salespeople are going to, you know, they're going to pick up on that. And furthermore, you're right. If I make a sale and then I just throw it over the fence to somebody else in my company to implement it, well, that doesn't work. I mean, what kind of a leader am I? That's not leadership at all if that's my behavior. And so, you know, for me, success in sales starts at the leadership level of the organization. It starts with strategy that's aligned with our culture. It starts with a customer first belief system that we actually do even when it's not easy. You know, like when there's a problem and it might cost us a little bit, we still do the right thing. And, you know, when you build that kind of a culture, you can have a high performance sales team with super satisfied customers.
How much of that do you think is the way that we've structured selling as a profession versus the environment and the expectations that we place on sellers? And I'll give you an example. I was doing a research study where we were interviewing salespeople at a huge enterprise organization, and they were telling us that they spend approximately 15 to 20 hours a week inputting data, updating PowerPoints for internal meetings, and all of this, like, what I'll call admin work. And his biggest complaint, one of the quotes that's really stuck with me, is like, you want me to be customer centric, and yet you are making me just do all this operational BS. And he's like, I'm working on Sunday nights because I got a forecast call on Monday. So, like, that to me is an environment issue. You're creating an environment where you're not allowing your sellers to be customer centric.
Yeah, so you're bang on. And I love the fact that you do market research, because my organization does as well. And you get amazing insights, you know, when you actually survey the market, do focus groups and that sort of thing. And you get you hear the real story from the people, and then take it back to leadership and you see their eyes open up. And you hit on a really big one. There's a couple of points that you hit on. First off, salespeople don't spend enough time selling because they're usually bogged down in non-sales related activities. It's amazing how little time per week they spend selling. Often it's as little as 20%.
Yep. You know, actually, like, in front of the customer, where they're supposed to be.
In front of, or talking to them, you know, engage with the customer, doing real customer activity. Yeah, it's low. And so that's a leadership problem. And a lot of times you're right, they're burying them in administrative activities because they want reports. Well, if you set up your tools properly, they should first and foremost help the salesperson. And if the salesperson gets help from those tools, then they'll use them. And then you'll be able to get the data you need out of the tool. So a CRM is a classic example. If the CRM is really designed to help me as a salesperson be productive, do follow-ups, you know, all those sorts of things, then I'll use that tool. And then you can run your report and see what I'm up to. And it shouldn't be an extra effort for me to do reporting. It should be built into my daily, weekly rhythm, you know, to be successful, right?
Yeah.
So that's the you know, the other bit of it is, you know, this whole reporting thing bogs people down and sends the wrong message. But the other thing that you comment on, and I'm going to check in with you, is are you asking, does the incentive aspect of sales create some natural conflicts?
I think I am asking that, and I will put out my opinion there. If you are only incentivizing the close, and you do not incentivize, they don't get any benefit for a renewal, then you're only incentivizing quick close. That's my opinion.
So I love your observations. The first thing I'll say is that incentive is hard, and it takes a lot of time to get it right. And usually sales leaders rush it, and then there's problems. They change it frequently, and that creates problems. It's complex. Nobody understands it. That creates problems. So to get it right is not easy. But I will say this. A compensation or incentive plan is a job description. The company is saying to me as the salesperson, this is what I want you to do. And if you don't do it, you don't get paid. And if you do it mediocre, you get paid mediocre. And if you do it extremely well, you get paid extremely well. So the truth is, it's a very clear, strong job description. And if everybody in the company had that clarity of job description, you know, I think you get more productivity, honestly.
Yeah.
Now, the devil's in the details. If I'm incenting one person's behavior at the expense of another's, that's not a good incentive plan. And that's part of the reason why I say it takes time to get it right. I just was interviewing a candidate yesterday, and he came from an organization where they have an individual compensation, but also a team compensation and a company-wide compensation. And so what that fosters is collaboration. Everybody has to do well, not just me. If I do well at the expense of others, I don't make as much money. And I think of it like a team. If I'm a star player on the team and everybody else is mediocre, we're not going to the playoffs, okay? And if I'm incented to help the other team players, you know, because my compensation and my desire to get to the playoffs incents me, then I'll work with the other players. And before you know it, we'll be collaborating and, you know, we'll elevate the performance of that entire team. So to have some common goals is important, not just individual goals. That makes a huge difference. And to have multi-departmental goals is really important. Then you get that collaboration and you eliminate the dysfunctional behavior where I'm winning at the expense of somebody else.
There are about 100 things that I want to touch in on that. My notes, I just scribbled all over my paper here. Okay, so one, I love the idea of compensation as a job description. I've never really thought about it that way, but you are 100% right. And we hear a lot of, complaining is the wrong word, but frustration from people in other roles where they say, like, I'm doing all of these things, I'm driving business, particularly like customer success and post-sales renewal type roles. They're like, I'm doing all of this work to drive retention. I've achieved a 95% retention rate, but I don't get any of like the bonus or the compensation or the boost from, you know, the fact that I saved X number of things, because it's not in their job description. It's not in their comp plan.
And they get mad at the salesperson, but in reality, right, they need to talk to the leadership and say, you know what, my plan, my compensation plan isn't really aligned with my contributions.
Yeah.
And some of them, you know, are afraid of a commission. They want the security of a salary, and yep, others are willing to take some variable bonus or something like that. But you are correct that, you know, the reality is a lot of people drive sales, and in some organizations, they get recognition, and in other organizations, they don't. And so I think either you have to hire people that are comfortable in that model, or you have to adjust the model, right? But it's not fair to think that only the salesperson's making that sale, because generally speaking, and I'm talking about business to business selling, right? You know, there are some sales where it's very transactional and it's one person who does it all. But generally speaking, in B2B, it's a team sport. And everybody on the team should, you know, should be taken care of. They don't have to be taken care of identically, but they should all feel like, hey, my role's respected and valued, and I'm compensated in a way that is in alignment with my contribution.
One of the things that I love to talk about is the idea that everybody is in a revenue role, even if you're in a volunteer position, because you are either revenue generating or you are revenue responding. And I think when people start to think about themselves as, oh, I'm in accounting, but I'm in a revenue responding role. I would not have a role without revenue, right? I'm in customer success. I generate revenue and I respond to it. So when we're thinking about how do we create an environment, like let's talk about tactics. If right now we are hearing this, someone's listening to this podcast and they say, oh no, we have a situation where one person's success is at the expense of someone else. How do we even start to dig into this to create an environment where we no longer have that problem?
So it's pretty complicated in one level. I mean, I think the solution is relatively easy to explain, but it takes effort and time to execute successfully. And it starts with, at the top of the house, the leadership team has to get in alignment on things that we talk about that, you know, everybody talks about, but don't really practice. And that's vision, values, mission, culture, strategy. Let's start there, you know, because if you do that, then we're thinking about the individual departments and how they all roll up together to achieve the overarching goals. And then we start to have strategy for the company, and each department takes a piece of that strategy and says, here's how I'm going to execute to support that strategy. Here's my strategy to support the overarching strategy. Here's my tactics to support the overarching. And then you start to get cross-departmental cooperation and collaboration. So if you don't have a unifying goal, if you don't have agreement at the top, it doesn't happen. Everybody runs their business independent of everybody else, and they do the best they can, but they've got blinders. They can't see very well what's going on elsewhere, and they're not really connected to each other. And so, you know, that culture doesn't really support, you know, achieving the overarching goal, and those companies tend not to execute as well. So in my belief, that's really the way to do it. And I've done this many times in my career, and I've seen it, you know, work. I've also seen it fail. And it doesn't fail because it isn't the right approach. It's because of the execution. You know, you might not have leaders that are willing to collaborate. You might not have, you know, a leadership team that's willing to get real about, you know, what is our culture or what do we want it to be and so on. They're not aligned. And so then you have to make some changes before you've got a team that's aligned. I want to talk a little bit longer and tell a quick story because I think it applies. And it's a little controversial, this story, because I'm going to talk about the New York Yankees, and some people like them and some people hate them.
My friend hates the Yankees. And in fact, he has a shirt that says even Jesus hates the Yankees. So maybe think of that too. So yes, we can talk about the Yankees. If you love the Yankees, we apologize in advance. If you hate the Yankees, we also apologize in advance. Either way.
There you go. So it's a good story because it's a true story. So George Steinbrenner owned that club for a long time, and he was also very controversial and not loved by a lot of people and loved by some. But here's the interesting thing. The Yankees did win a lot under his leadership, and he did something really interesting. Every spring, he would hold a company-wide meeting, and you have to realize, like, these ball clubs have a lot of employees. It's a big corporation.
Yeah, it's more than the guys out on the field, right? It's more than the coach. That's the ones you see. It's an entire group of people down to a executive chef for the players.
That's exactly right. And George said to every single person, our goal is to win the World Series this year. And you need to figure out how you're going to support that goal. And they did team building. strategy, all that kind of stuff. Like they literally had, you know, the guys cleaning the locker room, talking to the guys making the food, talking to the gals doing PT, like figure out like in your job, what you're going to do to get us to the World Series. It was everybody's responsibility. Everybody had the same goal. There was one goal in that company. And I do say the word company, not team, right? There was one goal of the New York Yankees company, which was to win the World Series. And George would fly the whole company down to Florida for spring training so that they could see the team, so they could understand what was going on, so that they could start at the beginning of the year building their plan to support the World Series victory. And that's a very different mindset than a lot of companies in general, and certainly a lot of sports teams. And, you know, I think that really says it. Like, you know, if you've got a clear goal and everybody understands the goal, then you can start to say, well, what's my part in supporting that goal? Yeah. But most companies don't have such a clear goal.
No, I'm sitting here thinking, like, even of my company of just a few people, do I have that clear, like, what are we trying to do and what is everyone's role in it? I want to ask you a follow-up question to that, though, and maybe this answer is not public. For all of the people in the company, if they did got to the goal, they did the World Series, they won, or whatever their goal was, did they get rewarded? Because I think about the players who are holding the trophy and you know, spraying the champagne. They obviously got rewarded. I'm sure they got bonuses for winning. Do we know or do we suspect that there was also rewards and bonuses for the rest of the company if the goal was achieved?
So, I mean, relative to George Steinbrenner, from what I understand, yes. You know, people say that he was a lunatic in some ways, but if he made a commitment to you, he honored it. Like if you delivered on the promise, he was not afraid to reward people. And, you know, often he would make an example of someone in a positive way that had, you know, let's say an invisible job that did it well, and he would support them, you know, bonus them, that sort of thing. Now, also, he was famous for firing people emotionally, right? So he was definitely, you know, a very controversial person, but his intent wasn't to like trick people. You know, that culture was in place for a long time and employees understood the role and they all rallied to it. Like, you know, you could talk to people in that company. I had a chance to, you know, to work with some of their leadership years ago. And, you know, when I would like walk around the building and talk to people, like they were really all on board about, you know, this team's going to win and this is what I'm doing. And I did something different this year because, you know, I talked to the players and they said it would really make a difference. And I mean, they were really all in on it. It was a culture of we're winning the World Series. That was the culture.
I think that this is such an important conversation because a lot of the people that I talk to are business leaders. They are not necessarily on the front lines of sales anymore. They're leading a team or they're leading a company. And I don't know that I can think of a single person that I have ever talked to that could have such a clear, like, what good looks like and what, and like by definition, what good doesn't look like. Yeah. So how the heck do we even form this thing that we all are trying to achieve? Is it really just going back to that vision, mission, and values, culture, and strategy, which I feel like a lot of people do as a performative exercise? Do we just have to go back and do it for real?
I think you got to go back and do it for real. And you're right. A lot of times it is just an exercise. And that's the problem I'm sure you see sometimes with market research is you give them these great insights and it just sits on a shelf and they don't execute it, right?
It drives me crazy that happens.
Crazy.
Yes.
And you know, in my business, you know, our value prop for research is we bring it to life. We're going to make sure you implement it. We'll be part of the implementation team because it sits on the shelf so often. So I think that, I don't think there's anything wrong with mission, vision, value, strategy, you know, culture. I think you just got to do it and you got to really stick with it. And it's like, it's not an event. It's the way it is. Like we do it all the time. And there are some good examples. So I'll give you a really great example. And that's the Disney Corporation. Their vision is, here we go, to make people happy. And that's it, right? And now they build their whole business around that. So a cruise ship line is about to make people happy. You know, a theme park is about to make people happy. You know, a live action movie is to make people happy. ESPN in sports is entertainment to make people happy. So the vision, you know, can serve a lot of changes in the business. It doesn't mean we don't change our tactics. It doesn't mean we don't change how we deliver, but our goal is to make people happy. And that does provide, you know, a foundation for the culture. Like I'm going to be crass, but, you know, Disney wouldn't do something that would be like horrific or, you know, like visually disturbing.
Yeah.
Okay. because it doesn't fit the vision.
And right. It doesn't make people happy.
No, it doesn't make people happy. So, you know, this idea of really starting there and being serious about it matters a lot. And then you can see how it translates into sales quite easily. Right now, sales has got a direction. And oh, by the way, if the company isn't really in business to serve their customers, I don't think that they're ever going to be a great company. Okay. So
I want my
sales organization to be in the business of serving their customers. I want my company to be in the business of serving the customers. And, you know, if you do that, you're going to be well established and you're going to be very successful. If you fake it, we've seen that a lot. We see what it looks like. It's not so pretty.
You know, thinking about all of the incredible people that you know or aspire to know, who else should we be paying attention to? Who is maybe doing this right?
Well, there are a lot, you know, and for me, I get a lot of inspiration. First off, you know, I do a lot of reading. I always want to learn. And so one of the things that I'm doing is, you know, reading about, you know, small companies and big companies. I like Fast Company because I'm learning constantly. I love working with my clients. They teach me so much. I get inspiration from poetry, actually, and even from music and from quotes. I have a massive quote file. Whenever I find an inspirational quote, I put it in that file. It's like probably 40 pages long now. And I read through it and I pull quotes out and I share them. So all of that. But I want to single out one guy in the moment based on this conversation. That's John Chambers, who ran Cisco, okay, for 10 years. He was a CEO from like 95 to, you know, 2015 or thereabouts. So like 20 years, I'm sorry. And he was always a salesman, all right, in the best sense of the word. He was a leader that sold, okay? You know, he cut his teeth with IBM, so he did grow up with a sales culture. And he brought that sales culture to Cisco. But it was about thought leadership. It was about innovation. It was about solving customer problems. He would go out in the field with salespeople. He was always meeting with customers. And, you know, Cisco has always had good products, but I wouldn't say they ever had the very best. And I don't think their goal was to have the very best. Their solution was to always take care of the customer, to have a roadmap, to have integration, to make sure that if you were with Cisco, you were always going to be well cared for. And, you know, some of Cisco's competitors would be in the IT shop pitching the speeds and feeds of their products. And John Chambers would be in the C-suite or at the board of directors talking about the vision of their company and his company and how together they would be successful, that he could help them achieve their vision, their goals. And Cisco, during his tenure, went from like $1.5 billion to $50 billion. Okay, so he got the financial reward, but it was all about customer-centric leadership approach to selling. So he's my guy.
I love that because we didn't plan this. This was not something that we planned ahead of time. But one of my most impactful mentors is Ron Ritchie, who was his chief of staff during that time. And so Ron and I meet every single week. He is one of the best advisors I have ever had in my entire life because one, he believes in me, but two, he doesn't let me like off the hook for anything. He gives me really great feedback and holds me accountable. So I've heard a lot about John Chambers, and he is truly, Ron speaks so highly of him. Yeah. And what I've learned about him, I'm obviously also impressed. But the most important question, if someone is connecting with you, if they want to hear more, if they want to learn more from you, where can they find you online?
Well, I think the easiest place to find me is at leadership-selling.com. That's the name of my book. I've written a book on sales leadership and sales execution called Leadership Selling. If you go to that website, you'll get information on the book. You'll also get information about me. And there's links to my other companies. I've got a consulting company. We talked about the market research. We provide those services and I do keynote speaking and a variety of things. And so I think if you go to that leadership-selling.com website, it'll be an entry point. I also encourage you to connect with me on LinkedIn. You can follow me or even connect with me. I've got a newsletter and, you know, I post pretty regularly and, you know, I love to meet people and share ideas. And so, you know, don't be shy, reach out.
I do want to dig into your book just a little bit more. Tell us a little bit more about the book. I actually just got a copy ordered. It's going to be here on Monday. So I definitely encourage everyone who's listening to grab a copy of the book. But I haven't had a chance to read it yet. So give us the Cliff Notes version. What could we expect to find between the covers?
So this book is really written for sales leaders and executives. Individual salespeople will get value from it for sure, but it was really written to complement what I see in the market, which is a lot of how-to books. It's not so much a how-to book. It's really a strategy book, and it'll challenge the status quo of selling, starting off with this whole conversation. You know, my belief is that, you know, be a leader, sell to leaders, right? Do thought leadership, be customer centric, be business outcome oriented. And so I've got four basic stages in the process, and it'll complement other people's sales methodology. It doesn't compete with them, but the first stage is engage, and that's really building the relationship. And you don't even think about talking about you and your company and your product if you haven't built a relationship. Trust, credibility, and relationship first, right? Then we move into a proper discovery to really understand their business. That's the explore stage, because I can't make any recommendations if I don't know enough about your business, okay? Right. And you're not willing to talk to me until I build a relationship with you, because you're not going to take time and educate me on your business unless you think I'm worth your time. So I have to prove myself first. And that's why we build a relationship first, then we do the discovery, and then we're in a position to collaborate and make recommendations. And the fourth stage is post-sales, which is deliver on the promise. Do what you said you're going to do. Make sure they're happy. First off, it's your integrity. Secondly, it's your reputation. Third off, you'll get referrals. And fourth off, you'll get repeat business. So only an idiot would not take care of the customer after the sale. And that's it. I mean, I think it's a great book. It's done really well on Amazon. It's hit number one in three business categories, you know, which I'm really quite pleased about that, because it says that the market is getting some value. And, you know, it's a quick read. It's about 3 hours, 160 pages. So there you go.
Well, I can't wait for Monday now when that book shows up. I'm looking forward to checking it out. Make sure you also grab a copy. Thank you so much for coming on to the Growth Signal. This was a really important conversation, but I think it's also one that our listeners are going to find real immediate value from. So thank you for joining me.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. I love the questions and the conversation. It's really great. Thank you.